Raymond lobbied in Washington to ensure that the United States had enough big import terminals to handle liquefied natural gas ships. Forecasts by the Bush administration's analysts at the nonpartisan Energy Information Agency suggested that the United States had only about 20 years' worth of natural gas supply left under its soil. America would soon need to import gas, just as it already imported oil. In the United States, in 2003, gas supplied about a quarter of the country's energy supply to generate electricity, heat water in homes, and fuel industrial processes. ExxonMobil supported a National Petroleum Council study in 2003 that made recommendations to the Bush administration to expand the industry. Raymond had developed a friendship with Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan. The men had gotten to know each other while serving together briefly on the J.P. Morgan Board of Directors, and then stayed in touch. Raymond impressed his analysis about natural gas on the Federal Reserve Chairman. The American economy needed planning to build the facilities to import and reconvert liquefied natural gas in the future. ExxonMobil's economic forecasters in corporate planning reported to the management committee that they expected the global LNG market to double by 2010. ExxonMobil was busy investing in that market worldwide. The global sales force and the corporation's gas marketing division finalized a contract to ship 2 billion cubic feet of liquefied gas from Qatar into the United Kingdom, for example. Raymond educated Greenspan about the coming shape of the emerging global LNG market. Without telling Raymond in advance that he intended to go public, Greenspan testified before Congress, highlighting America's coming gas deficit as a strategic issue in the American economy. Preparing for an LNG world would require construction of large import terminals that carried environmental and safety risks, but the thrust of Greenspan's testimony was that America's gas deficits would require such risk-taking. Greenspan's friendship with Raymond was not well known, but one analyst aware of their relationship remembered reading Greenspan's unusual testimony about natural gas markets and thinking, "He's giving Raymond's testimony." As it turned out, the natural gas market in the United States was one of the few industry subjects that Lee Raymond had misjudged. "Gas production has peaked in North America," he declared at an industry conference in 2003. "America's only large, unexploited deposits of gas were in Alaska, stranded from commercial markets in the lower 48 for lack of a pipeline. Even if a pipeline were built," Raymond continued, "he expected total American gas production to decline, unless there's some huge find that nobody has any idea where it would be." In fact, such a find of sorts was coming by the decade's end, and it would transform ExxonMobil's strategy within the United States. Lee Raymond just did not see it coming. Hardly anyone else did, either. Abdullah bin Abdulaziz, the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, was in his mid-70s at the time of the ExxonMobil merger. He moved among manicured, well-watered palace complexes the size of some college campuses. There was one palace in Riyadh, the Saudi capital, and another in Jeddah, and another in the desert where Abdullah bred Arabian horses. The prince kept an unusual schedule. He slept in 2 4-hour shifts, one between 9 p.m. and 1 a.m., and a second between 8 a.m. and noon. In the hours between, he swam for exercise and did office work. He was a goateed, barrel-chested man with a serious and penetrating gaze. He had much to contemplate. His older half-brother, King Fahd, had been incapacitated by a stroke in 1995. The Saudi royal family was too decorous and divided to remove Fahd from power formally, despite his incapacitation, so Abdullah ran the country as de facto king. But he was constrained by shifting family and ministerial factions, including the power center around Fahd's son. Abdullah felt that his kingdom needed to modernize its economy and its education system. Saudi Arabia imported too much of its skilled labor from Asia and Europe, while employing its native sons in do-nothing government bureaucracies and religious institutions. The state oil company, Saudi Aramco, which had been owned in part by Exxon and Mobil before nationalization during the 1970s, was so bloated that it employed about three-quarters as many people as ExxonMobil did to operate worldwide. The Saudi regime needed to create jobs for its restless population of young men, But even with the inefficiencies that resulted, Saudi Aramco was a rare bright spot in the Saudi economy in that many of its homegrown employees and engineers were professionals who could work to international standards. In many other bureaucracies in the kingdom, too many Saudis lacked the skills and leadership to compete in the global economy. If the royal family did not do something to change this before its oil ran out, then a common fatalistic aphorism among the Saudi elite, "We started on camels, we acquired jets, we will return to camels," might well be borne out. By 1998, seeing what Qatar was undertaking with its massive gas-fed industrial complexes, Abdullah decided to leapfrog beyond Saudi Arabia's dependence on cash-generating oil sales into a more sustainable, job-creating future. The key to his thinking was natural gas. That year, in the autumn, while on his first state visit to America as regent, Abdullah invited the chief executives of the 7 largest American and European oil companies to the McLean, Virginia mansion of the cigar-chomping Saudi ambassador to Washington, Prince Bandar bin Sultan. Lee Raymond and Lou Nodo attended. It was awkward for them because at the time they were in the advanced stages of merger discussions known only to them and a few dozen others involved in the talks. They agreed to put on their game faces and act as if nothing unusual was going on. It was extraordinary for all of the executives of the largest oil corporations to gather in one place with the head of state of an oil-rich country. In an Arabian-style diwan setting of cushioned chairs and couches overlooking the Potomac River, the meeting began stiffly. It suggested the formal atmospheres of a meeting of the heads of competitive crime families trying to divide up casino building rights. Abdullah invited the oil chiefs to speak about how they might work with Saudi Arabia's natural gas resources if they were invited back to the kingdom as investors for the first time in more than 2 decades. This was an enormous opportunity for all of the executives present. Abdullah's gas initiative could not make up for the economic pain of oil nationalization, but it offered a rare chance to re-enter the kingdom with a big play, and who knew where that might lead.